Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. Some people are afraid of heights. Me, I'm afraid of having something stuck in my teeth before an important Zoom call. But in the world of email marketing, many senders are scared of spam house listings. Dun, dun, dun. Just kidding. Even smart and savvy senders can find themselves on spam houses block lists. And when ignored, these listings can seriously impact email performance. Before your spine starts tingling, remember that spam house are the good guys, and they're here to help you avoid being listed. And even if you are listed, it's not the end of the world. Take a big breath. Today, we are looking beneath the mask and talking to a special guest from Spam House. Let's get to the bottom of how to avoid listings and why senders should see Spam House as a force for good.
And it's a very special guest indeed, because for the second episode of Email After Hours in a row, it's an old colleague of ours. It's a real pleasure to welcome Sri Chandran with us today. And you worked together, we even did a few webinars together back in the day, Sri, and they were great. And, you know, now you're fetched up with Spam House, one of Validity's most important partners. And if we can't have you to ourselves, well, then we're really glad to have you with Spam House. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you joining us here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Guy.
So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Spam House. What is Spam House's mission?
Okay, so Spam House is a 25-year-old organization that's as long as Google has been on the internet. So I'll try to keep it simple. So we want to change the behavior of for the good of the internet. And we do this through being the authority on IP and domain reputation. And the data and intelligence enables us to weed out and highlight the malicious actors, and at the same time, educate and support those who want to change it for the better. And we would also like to do this with the like-minded community and like-minded partners like Validity.
You know, you raise a good point there, because I mean, I think Danielle was hopefully sort of half joking in her intro in terms of sort of how email marketers see Spam House, and I think some of them sort of live in fear of the role that you guys play in the email world. But, you know, I think as we've gotten to know each other, you guys are here as a force for good. And, you know, do you think that fear that some of those marketers feel towards Spam House is justified, or do we need to educate them a little bit about your real role?
Yeah, so the easy answer is, as a sender, if you're following all the best practices, you don't have to worry about being on the Spam House list. And but Spam House has a wide reach. At the end of the day, so senders control their own experience. The technical best practices like branding your reverse DNS, the hello domain, and authentication are a bare minimum nowadays. So the one thing we see is that spammers always get all these technical best practices right. And it's mostly automated scripts. They have their SPF, DMARC, and NICIM, and all these things in place. So do they accept the DMARC reports, or do they bounce? It's a completely different question. So something that we have been hearing for the longest time is like, hey, do better than a spammer. So I think it's time to go ahead and update that. It should not just be, don't look like a spammer, do better than the spammer is the more recent adage. So if a spammer is trying to, say, use the shared tracking pixel as a sender, it's better that, I think it's a given that you have to go ahead and brand your URLs. So if you're following your best practices and you're above par than spammers, you don't have to worry about being or getting listed at Spam House.
That's a relief, because I've worked with clients who basically have like blocklist PTSD from a Spam House listing from like 10 years ago. And they have changed their program in really positive ways, adhering not to just that, don't be a spammer, be a best in class, like optimized sender, major programmatic changes for the good. But talk to us about the most common behaviors that get an email program listed or an IP or domain listed by Spam House.
Sure. So Again, this is nothing new. The first and foremost reason we see a listing is lack of consent. So nothing replaces consent. And so senders need to have a double opt-in confirmed list, period. So that's the easy, that's again the answer.
Yes.
But again, that's the primary reason. But apart from that, we have many other behaviors that we see. One of them is the filter evading behaviors. So senders try to always snowshoe their mail streams or trying to use custom domains, the latest trend being, I don't know if you can call it custom TLDs, but with all the introduction of vanity TLDs, people just like to put their brand across multiple TLDs and just go and start sending emails with zero warm-up and zero reputation. So again, those are kind of behaviors which can be extremely sketchy and just can raise a red flag at our end. And there are other behaviors which are evading about evading filters. I think, Guy, during our prep call, we did speak about how spammers open free mail account and try to inflate engagement. So this has been happening for a while. And I remember back when I was at AOL, we used to get lists of these spammer free mail accounts. And most of the times, these spammers, of course, inflate engagement, but they also send emails to each other's accounts. So if we get one spammy account, we get other accounts also, which is kind of interesting. And the reason is because, hey, having an inflated address book is supposed to be a good reputation signal. So they try to go ahead and have a lot of email addresses over there and all sort of things. And trust me, in this day and age with the large language models and so on, it's not at all difficult for mailbox providers to go and figure out these things. So yeah, doing all those things can definitely get you listed. And finally, just like opt-in, have an opt-out, a sunset policy. The lack of a sunset policy is also one of the major reasons that you can, is one of the most common behaviors that we see. And all these are from a marketer's perspective, but what we see is a lot of botnet and malware activity. And I know it's 2023, and I might be preaching to the choir over here, but hey, have a fully qualified domain name in your reverse DNS, your brand, your hello domain, or your hello domain should have an A record. Or for that matter, yeah, limit your port 25 to just your mail server. So these are things we have been seeing for 25 years. And yeah, I think our job is to educate, and we'll continue educating them, educating everyone.
100%. I just love that example of yours sort of talking about, you know, how the spammers send to each other to try and sort of boost the engagement of each other's programs. You know, last time out, Danielle and I were talking about some of our sort of all-time favorite scams. And I wish we'd had that one because I'd have used it for sure. But more seriously, so, you know, when you're a legitimate email program owner, the last thing you want to do is get listed, but it does happen occasionally. So what are your expectations of that sender as they try to get delisted? You know, what are the steps they need to follow? What do they need to demonstrate to Spam House to facilitate that delisting?
So, the first thing is to identify the problem. When you are getting listed, it's good to go to the Spam House website. I know it by heart. It's just check.spamhouse.org. Just go to the website and figure out what your listing is. And trust me, there's a lot of detailed information on our website. And we put in a lot of effort to keep it up to date. So if it's not working or if there's something we are missing, do let us know. So once you have identified what the issue is, of course, you need to go ahead and fix it if it's like something related to your missing A recorder or whatever, or if it's something more elaborate, like you don't have a confirmed opt-in, that's a more serious issue that you need to take care of. So identify the problem, go ahead and fix it. And once you fix it, you can get back to the website, follow the link, and you can open a chicken with us. And usually, Opening a ticket and us giving you the first response is pretty quick, but the actual resolution of the issue really depends on if you have fixed the underlying issue. Because at Spam House, we don't have whitelists. So if you don't fix the issue and we just go by a word and go ahead and delist it, you might just get relisted again. So it's really important that you identify and fix the issue. And one thing about opening ticket is just going ahead and giving us as much information as possible. I would put a caveat for as much information as in giving us relevant information, and I'll get to that point later. So other thing also, it also depends on what kind of spam house zone or list that you are listed in. Spam house has multiple zones. So if you're on a CSS list, you might get a delisted automatically in a couple of days if you see the behavior stop. But if it's a SBL or a DBL listing, it needs to either go to a researcher or the team which is really involved in this.
Excellent advice. Thanks for that. And as you were answering, I mean, I was thinking, you know, you must see some really unexpected causes of listings at times. I mean, you talked a little bit earlier about the things like IP addresses and servers getting compromised. And I believe there was a story that you guys have been telling recently about somebody whose internet-enabled doorbell got hacked. Is that right?
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell?
Absolutely. It rings a bell every morning because it's a continued attack that we've been seeing for the longest time. So when it comes to, we've been seeing a lot of threats just with regards to IoT devices. So the doorbell is an excellent example. We have a detailed article on our website, just detailing how one of our spam house colleagues went ahead and helped the actual end user discover it. And another one that I really like to say, and that's something which we came across, is a user who was, again, having a lot of rogue hellos going from their network. And and we had a difficult time figuring out where exactly or what was the origin of that particular pattern. And the end user literally had to plug each and every IoT device on their network. And it actually was their Fire TV stick. So it was a bootleg Fire TV stick, which was apparently a free one that he received somehow, which goes on to say there's nothing free in the world. And yeah, it was just an app in that Fire TV stick. And we had to literally stop the Fire TV or remove the app to understand that that was the one that was causing the issue.
Oh, man, that's just so scary. I mean, I really hope the next time I go and open my smart fridge for a beer, it's not sending spam.
I'm just shaking my head. It's getting crazier and crazier. And I want to go back a little bit because Sri, you mentioned confirmed opt-in and consent. And I've seen interesting spam house ticket threads between a sender and spam house where it's like, well, confirmed opt-in is not a legal requirement where I am. And this becomes a bit of a hot topic, but often senders need to indicate that they have consent or that was legitimately obtained before spam house will consider delisting that sender or that IP or domain. Can you share with us what defines consent?
Okay. Honestly, it's an irony that we're talking about consent in 2023. And so I can say, I'm sure GDPR has this well-defined when we say consent. It is as simple as saying the receiver of the email has to provide explicit permission to receive emails, period. And again, GDPR breaks this into four basic requirements: freely given, informed, specific, and unambiguous. So one of the reasons we get from senders very often is, again, it's one of the things that we hear from them is like, hey, I am supposed to send this legally mandated email to my user base, and that's why I'm hitting these X, Y, Z, these number of traps and so on. And we clearly know that if you really go through GDPR, it does break one of the basic GDPR requirements. And we have an excellent article about this also in our resources. So, yeah. Honestly, there's not much I can define on this or explain a lot more. So yeah, The other thing that I always hear or wanted to reiterate is your permission is not transferable unless it's specified. Mm. So that's something else which we see quite often that people try to hide behind. So again, we've been educating for 25 years, and I think, yeah, we'll keep on going forever, I don't know.
I agree. I mean, you know, there's times where I just absolutely want to bang my head against the wall. You know, why are we even still talking about the importance of consent in 2023? You know, surely by now, every marketer knows what they ought to be doing. I just don't know. But anyway, you know, Danielle, I know that you got a question for Sri about the types of listings that receivers can get from Sperm House.
I do. This is a real boots on the ground question for you, Sri. So over the last year, we on the professional services team with Validity, all of the CSMs at Validity, we've had a lot of questions about informational listings. And that could be a whole topic unto itself. So we're not going to write the book on that right now. But can you tell us the difference between an informational listing and a full listing?
Sure. So again, I know it's a hot topic, and I would not do complete justice because there's a lot to this. But simply put, a Sperm House information listing has been at least in-house for a long time. It might be recent for senders, but there's a lot of research being put into the information listing. And again, I want to simplify this. The information listing simply means there's a lack of bounce handling. So, well, or what we call in the deliverability space as a lack of sunset policy. So these are mails sent to addresses which never gave permissions, and these addresses have been sitting idle for the longest time, and these addresses have never interacted to your campaigns ever, and they're providing you zero value. So yeah, that's information listing. And the reason they're called information listing is they're not part of any of the zone files, and they're basically just early warning signals. But yeah, if you choose to ignore those early warning signals, they can very well go live and they can be active. And again, it's based on ASNs and so on. So it is really important that you go ahead and look at these signals. And again, these are just warning signals that Sperm House is providing. And I think something related to this, like I remember I was on the, if you can call on the sender side when the information listing started, working for an ESP. So well, one of the things that while digging deeper into this is about bounce handling. So there's a whole lot of confusion on the ESP side. They like to give it pretty names like soft bounces and hard bounces and so on. But the definition, and there's a lack of clarity even on the ESP side, like, hey, what should I really consider a hard bounce? And again, it's a rabbit hole. I don't want to really go inside it, but I think that's one thing that the information listing really brought up. I can give you an example. Like if you are getting an email address which is bouncing for whatever, mailbox full or whatever, for multiple months together, multiple campaigns, there's no reason you should be going ahead and sending it repeatedly. So improving your suppression policy or making changes to your suppression policy is really important. And at times it is the ESPs pass the buck to the brand and the brand pass the buck to the ESP. So no one takes a stand on it. And I think that's where the information listing really brings that to the foreground.
Wow, as you start riffing on the topic of bounce management, I was thinking we should have put you together with Seb from the CSA on our previous episode, because that's his pet topic. We could have talked about it all day. But seriously, you know, you guys at Sperm House, you know, you get to monitor a lot of data. Some of it comes from us at Validity. It means you've got a really unique view of the online threat landscape. And I think we've touched on some of those already, you know, compromises, botnets, abuse of vanity domains. Anything else you can tell us about some of the emerging trends you're seeing and how marketers should be responding to them?
Again, from a marketer's perspective, there's not much. Most of what we see is, again, the malware and botnet activity. But a few of these things keep on surfacing repeatedly. Like I remember like this whole DKIM replay attack, which happened, I think, a year or two ago, or maybe more recently. It's times a blur now on the email side. So it was something which happened in 2016-17. It was just that people realized, hey, domain reputation is the thing. Now let's spammers thought, okay, let's go ahead and game it. So similarly, the subscription bombing is something which we are seeing just coming up again now. You'd be surprised by the number of websites which are just purely open. You can just go ahead and do anything with the forms over there. And yeah, that's something which you're seeing again. You're seeing a lot of trap hits due to lazy security, if I can say.
Absolutely. And in fact, just before we move on to our next question, I wanted to dig into that because I've been reading that there's a form of subscription bombing, which is effectively when a business's database gets hacked. And the scammer's like taking all of those email addresses and effectively sort of registering with hundreds of email programs to generate the welcome email so that the subject whose data has been compromised misses the real notification, which is, hey, watch out, your data has been compromised, change your password, etc. So is that something you've seen examples of recently?
Yeah, from our perspective, our visibility is more data that we get from our partners and so on. Yeah. So maybe that's something. But I definitely, as I mentioned, this is something which has happened in the past. Yeah. But as part of AOL, I've seen this a lot. Like that's where, like when you get those mailbox pulls and so on, you have to take care of, you have to notice all those things. So yeah,
it's scary.
As we're talking about this, I'm having an image of one podcast episode where we get all of our guests together and just go on a rant about list bombing and bounce handling and all of this stuff, which will be complete chaos. But there is another trend that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast, and that is AI. This year is very much the year of AI, even though it's been around and brewing for a little while. We're starting to see how that's infiltrating email. From your viewpoint, have you seen any uses of generative AI yet?
Okay, so I was expecting and not so expecting this question because, yeah, we are seeing it a lot. And surprisingly, we are seeing it in our ticket queues. So that's where most of the... we are seeing a lot of bot-generated ChatGPT. Generated requests coming in. And trust me, it's not good. And there was this funny thing, or one of the funny tickets that happened a couple of weeks ago. So someone, of course, put in a ChatGPT ticket requesting for a spam house CSS removal. And ChatGPT, with all the large language model that it has, rightfully went ahead and gave CSS HTML template. And of course, it was some spammer who had opened the ticket. So it was really funny because, yeah, that's what we can expect from ChatGPT. And so we're seeing a lot of tickets being generated from ChatGPT. The other thing we did notice is that a lot of non-native English speakers are using ChatGPT to open tickets. And that's when we have to be extra vigilant to not dismiss each of these ticket as spammer, because that's a genuine case. They want to go ahead and they want to make a case where they want to request delisting. But again, so far what we've seen is just a lot of text with not a lot of context. So it's not really helpful for us if you're using ChatGPT to open tickets. Rather just tell us the issue, even if it's just a bounce message that you're seeing, that is more helpful than a ChatGPT generated response. So yeah, again, we don't have much visibility on the marketing side, but I am pretty sure if you're creating patterns, the filters will catch it. So yeah.
What I would give to see one of these ticket submissions that's written by ChatGPT.
I know, right? You know, hey, ChatGPT, please get me unlisted from Spam House. You couldn't make it up. Oh, wow. This has been such a good conversation. I'm sort of really sorry we haven't got twice the time, because I think we could easily carry on sort of talking about this for the rest of the day. But we'll have to get you back sometime, Sri. But we need to start wrapping up for today. And as we normally do, we like to hit our guests with a couple of quick fire questions to finish off with. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time today talking about things that email programs do wrong. But, you know, for you as an individual, as a consumer, is there a brand doing email that you admire because they're doing it really well?
I'm an inbox zero person. I try to.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's pain, you know. So I try to keep my promotions folder as clean as possible. So there's not much marketing email in there. But there was this brand that I purchased. That's a very small brand called The Brand. I'm not even sure where they're located. So they make mobile covers and cases and laptop skins. So I purchased it about 5-8 years ago. I don't know when exactly. But their campaigns have been really quirky. And I remember them using Gmail annotations, and they're pretty smart to get on all the latest things. And I think that's one of the few brands that I have just, I'm still subscribed to, even though I have not purchased anything from them recently. I just make sure I go and open the mail just to make them know, hey, I'm a human being behind. Go to the website once in a while to check out designs. And I have not purchased it because mostly the shipping is more expensive than the actual thing for me because I live on the other side of the continent. So, but yeah, that's one of the few brands that I really like because, yeah, the one is the content is relevant. Even though I'm not a regular, they don't pump me with email every other week. It's more occasional, seasonal, and they know what I like. And they also seem to adopt the latest in email, which I like to check out.
It's so funny how people who are a part of the email marketing world intentionally interact with messages that they have in their mailboxes. They're like, if I like this brand and I'm loving these emails, I'm going to take specific actions with these messages. Treat them well, give them a little love. We have one more question.
It's like post-pandemic, post-MPP. So yeah.
One more question, a bit of a silly one, which Guy has somehow managed to dodge answering, at least on the podcast. He's told me off pod, we've all had an embarrassing email address at one time or another, especially if we've been online for as long as we have. What's the most embarrassing email address you've ever had in the past?
You used to have told about Guy before we started this podcast, and I was like, with a caveat that I need to know Guy's emails.
Okay, you tell me yours, and I'll tell you mine.
Okay, that's a deal. So this is beginning of Gmail. Just out of college, I was setting up email accounts for my family. So I wanted to snag those pricey Gmail because it just came out of beta or whatever. It wasn't beta for the longest time, I think, out of private beta. So set it up for the whole family. So what I did smartly is put my first name, put my date of birth, and then my email address.
It's me, and here's everything you need to know about me.
But yeah, I think I've been on the ad spam site for a long time to realize that I'm not alone.
Okay, I'll try and keep this short, but I spent a lot of time as an email consultant, and I've worked with quite a few of the major online dating brands over the years. And, you know, to effectively help them improve their email activity, you've got to play the game. You've got to set up some profiles. You've got to interact with them to see what kind of messaging gets generated, et cetera. And people who know me will know that I spent a lot of my life in South Africa. South Africans love doing their barbecues in South Africa. It's called a braai. And there's a very specific type of South African sausage called a boerewors. It loosely translates as farmer's sausage. And it's long, it's about 12, 15 inches, it's like curled up in a spiral. So you can understand there's a bit of innuendo going on here as well. And one of my favorite characters was a guy doing a barbecue. His profile name was Boerewors Boy, and the email address was boereworsboy@hotmail.com. So there you have it.
There you have it, everybody.
Okay. Yeah, it just reminded me of, like, again, early 2000s when AOL screen names were still in vogue and people used to have these crazy AOL screen names. I can't remember, but I remember seeing a lot of weird names. And when you used to get tickets from them, it's it's really difficult to have.
Fuck, is this for real?
And I think on related to this is like what I've been seeing on this, something more recent on the B2B side, domains. Like I came across something yesterday where the domain was your warm up or howtowarmup.com, something like that. And I was like, okay.
I think we've just identified a topic for a future podcast.
Gosh, we sure have. This has been great.
Speaking of which, we need to call it a day for today. Hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this as much as we have today. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We've got some great topics coming up. We're going to be talking about email automation. We're going to be revisiting email migrations and definitely some content coming up on Apple's latest big announcement about link tracking protection. So make sure you carry on downloading us every 2 weeks, and we'll keep you guys up to date about the newest and latest in the world of email marketing. Bye for now.
Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours, and see you next time.